adventuring. I hope you're having a great day and a great night and a great afternoon, whatever it is for you.
You're listening to the only Magic the Gathering podcast that features me, Anne, Maria, and Megan.
That's right. Maria and I considered starting an offshoot podcast.
Yeah, but it would conflict with the podcast that I do with Megan.
Yes.
And it would conflict with the podcast we do without you, Ben.
Yes. Wait.
Yeah, right. But that's what... Yeah.
And it would also conflict with the podcast that Maria does with your toilet.
That's right.
Yeah, just Maria and my toilet.
It's called Saturday Nights.
It's a really interesting podcast. I've learned so much about water pressure and sewage systems.
Look it up. It's it's on iTunes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Flappers.
Ball cocks.
Yeah. Those chain things.
This is a podcast where we explore what it means to become a Magic the Gathering player. I've been playing since a long time ago.
And we've been playing for about a year.
Yep. Just coming up on a year. We're having our birthday.
That's right.
Our year-iversary.
Mm-hmm. Year-iversary is going to happen pretty soon, dude.
Oh, man. I think technically it's sometime in November.
I thought it was October, but let's...
I think it might be October.
We'll leave that up to the history books.
We'll figure out, and when we do, we're going to throw a podcast party, and guess what? Y'all are invited.
Mm. Woo! Yes, wait, we're going to also throw a podcast birthday party for the one-year anniversary of the podcast.
Yes, there's so many parties going to happen.
So many parties, you guys.
So many parties going to happen, and you're invited to all of them.
All of them!
Gifts are mandatory.
We will be registering at themeatery.org.
And Target.
And Target,
I need some paper towels.
I need a bucket.
I'm going to register at the grocery store.
I really want to do a wedding registry where it's just like
paper plates.
I need a bucket.
Windex. Mop.
All items that are under $10.
At Target.
And that are needed on a regular errand basis.
A couple of stacks of Post-its.
Just think how much time you're saving yourself from doing errands. That's the real value.
That's pretty amazing.
I want to buy hand soap, but I'm getting married at the end of the week. I might as well just wait.
Someone will give it to me.
We've got a great show coming up for you guys. We're going to do
Froyo.
We're going to do some Froyo shots.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Brain freeze.
Ouch. Mm. We're going to do For the Noobs, talking about forcing in draft versus staying open. Megan's going to talk about game day and how she just plowed over a lot of people on game day.
Yep, like a plow in snow.
And we're going to do some Flavor Text Theater, so stick around for that.
For the Noobs.
Yeah.
All right. Ben, what does it mean if I'm forcing a color in a draft?
Well, basically, the idea by enforcing a color or forcing an archetype is that you've decided before you even open up that pack, before you even know what's in it, what you're going to do.
Huh?
What? Why would I make up my mind like that?
Well,
maybe you're psychic.
Making decisions is hard, right?
It is hard.
Ben, I put two cupcakes in front of you. Choose.
I'm forcing chocolate.
Okay, there's strawberry and vanilla. So
also write that down as the as the euphemism.
Oh God.
One of the big reasons is just because it's a lot easier. It's a lot easier to pick beforehand what you want to do. You can familiarize yourself with the cards that are important in that color, that archetype, and you don't have to worry about it once you get in there.
It's kind of like dibsing a color, but no one else knows that you dibsed it.
Yeah, and I think usually you're more successful forcing an archetype. I think that's more typical than forcing a color. So, for example, in M14... there was a red-black deck where Act of Treason was a really good card because you would take cards like Blood Baron or Expendable, whatever.
Barrage of Expendables.
So you had a card that would take control of your opponent's cards for a turn, And then you'd have other cards that would let you sacrifice it. And so those cards worked really well together. But if you didn't have one, the other card wasn't necessarily as good. So during a normal draft, it can be pretty confusing to try to decide, okay, when do I take the act of treason?
Right, how highly do I prioritize it?
And when do I take the sacrifice card? So it's when do I take the enabler and when do I take the...
Enabled.
The enablee.
And so, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like in that situation, you're going to... If I was, say, trying to draft that...
If I was forcing
the sacrifice deck, I would want to take the Barrage of Expendables and the Blood Barons higher than the Act of Treasons. One reason being because Act of Treason is a card that you can get later in the game. Because if you don't have the sacrifice deck, it's just kind of a one-off.
That's true. That's kind of true, but I think...
And also those sacrifice cards can do something like Blood Baron. Even if I don't have an act of treason, I can still use it.
You definitely want to make sure that you're prioritizing correctly, and a lot of that does have to do with how highly are other people going to prioritize these cards. But I actually think that's true regardless of whether or not you're forcing. Even if you've just naturally fallen into this deck, you still want to think, okay, I can afford to wait for that card or try to table it because there are much better cards in the pack. I think when you're forcing, and actually in that specific deck, you actually probably want as many Act of Treasons as you can get, while you only need a fixed number of sacrifice outlets.
Okay.
So I would probably take Act of Treason higher than most of the sacrifice outlets, although probably not Blood Baron, just because it was so much better than the other sacrifice outlets.
Yeah.
If that makes
like
any
Barrage
sense.
Of Expendables.
Yeah, Barrage is
pretty bad card. Bad card.
We had a listener actually suggest this topic for our show on themeatery.org. He said, you know, what do you guys think about forcing versus staying open? And he was making a case for forcing. So I have a question about forcing.
Okay.
Can you also force a color if, say, it's the first card that you open a draft? And you say, this is a really great card. You know what? I don't care what happens next. This card is so good that I'm only going to take this color as it comes around. That's another kind of force, I would imagine.
Yeah, you can... You can definitely open up some sweet rare or a good uncommon or something and say, okay, I'm just going to force this deck. In Theros, there's a cycle of uncommons, multicolor uncommons. There's one for each color combination, and they're all pretty good. So you might open one of those and say, okay, I'm just going to take these colors no matter what.
Or a Planeswalker, for instance.
Yeah, or a Planeswalker. Yeah, that's a good example. I think it's perfectly acceptable to do that. It really depends on what your goals are. I think the best if you're striving to win the most number of drafts that you can, or win the most number of draft games that you can, I think the correct strategy is always to leave the possibility of switching colors, pay attention to the power level of the cards that are being passed to you and what colors they're in and what colors they're not in.
That's called staying open.
Staying open, reading the signals, and giving yourself the option to switch into something else. Even if you open a Planeswalker. I did a draft once where I opened a foil Xenagos.
Nice.
And I ended up with a blue-black deck because I was cut off so hard. There was just... nothing. It turned out the person to my right was in red green, and then a person to his right was in red, and a person to his right was in green. So in that case, you know, forcing red green
would have been very detrimental.
Would have been a disaster. Yeah. I would have had an 0-3 deck for sure. And I saw so many black cards and then blue cards that it was like, there's no way I can't be in these colors. The signals are just so obvious.
And at the end of the day, that Xenagos is just one card in your deck.
Right, it's just
you
one
card.
You
need to have, you know, you're looking for 23 playables.
Yeah.
And Xenagos is only going to make one of them. So you've got 22 spots to fill.
If you have a super powerful card, you know, you can say to yourself, I'm probably going to, you know, depending on how long I expect games to go, I'm probably going to draw this card in a third to a half of my games. And then, you know, if it's super powerful, it might be, you know, it might basically let you win 60% of those games or 75% of those games. So if that card is your only way to win, you're not doing much better than 50%, are you? So I think it's better to stay open. Now, there's a few exceptions. One is if you're trying to teach yourself how a certain archetype works, or if you've never played with a certain rare before and you're saying, okay, I just want to play with this card and see how good it is, you might choose to force that color or force that archetype as a learning exercise for yourself, even though you might have a 10% lower chance of winning each game winning the whole match or whatever.
I want to force all one drops just to see how it goes.
Yeah, just to see how it goes. You never know. You never know. And then also, another way to look at it is if you're really familiar or you really like a certain archetype, like if you're going to have more fun just forcing it, then go for it.
But keep in mind that it might not turn out for you and your deck could really suffer because of
when
it.
When you force an archetype, it's a higher variance strategy. You are gambling. If the colors you're forcing or the archetype you're forcing is open, you're going to get all the cards because you are not going to waste any picks trying to figure out what colors to be in. You're just going to take those cards from the beginning and you're never going to lose a card. But if it's not open, then you're going to end up with a deck that has a lot of unplayable cards because you're not going to be able to get 23 cards that actually belong, that are actually playable cards.
This happened to me, in fact, one of my recent drafts where I tried to force Heroic because of how, it's a great mechanic.
Everyone's been talking about it.
It's
right now.
Very powerful. It's very fast.
Have you seen what Heroic is wearing these days?
It's super slimming.
So hot.
Super slimming.
God.
Heroic's abs. Oh my God.
She looks good. She looks so good.
People in limos are talking about Heroic.
The president's like, screw the healthcare website, heroic.gov. That joke's...
Go to that page, guys, heroic.gov.
That's what members of Congress were playing during recent filibusters.
It's just like, it was awful, you guys. Everybody at the table was trying to do it. And I was like, I am normally, my philosophy is to stay extremely open and to read my signals coming from my left or my right and understand what colors to be in and be rewarded later in the draft because I see more powerful cards coming later than they should be. Mm. That's what I like to do. But I was like, screw it. Let's try to draft Heroic. You guys, it did not work out. Everybody was doing it. All the cool kids were doing it. And I did it. I jumped off that bridge with the cool kids. We all died.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
So that's just a cautionary tale.
Yeah.
But, it can work out sometimes.
It's like, forcing a color is like, walking around in a trench coat and flashing people. Like, a lot of people are going to be really offended.
But
you might find that one person that's really into what you're showing them.
No, I thought you were going to say into flashing, but no, they're like, I don't like flashing.
Oh,
in this case.
Nice.
Well, for instance, my very first draft I ever played, I actually did force red. I went into the draft saying, I know how to play red well. That is the color
red
I enjoy.
Red or Rakdos?
It was just, I just said, I'm red is going to be one of my colors. And lucky for me, it just happened to be open. Yeah.
Also in sets like Theros, sets that are not multicolor sets like Ravnica, where you had to worry about certain color pairs, it's pretty reasonable. It can be reasonable to, you first pick a card, maybe it's a powerful rare, and then you say, okay, well, this is going to be one of my colors.
Yeah.
And then I'll stay open for the other color and just take whatever seems to be open. And that way, even if you only end up with a limited number of those cards, you at least stayed open enough in the other color that you could just take whatever.
Precisely.
So for example, in M14, like the best strategy was often just to force blue, like pick, okay, well, I have this opportunity, so I'm just going to take blue cards. And then whatever else, throw whatever other color.
I'll stay open in one color and force blue in the other.
Yeah.
I'll take these purple cards, because guess what? I've got three opportunities. It doesn't matter.
I'm just going to turn these everything. Cards over and never play them.
I will play them all face down. They are 2-2 bears.
Did you guys know that?
Yes.
Listeners?
Yes, listeners. Lovers. Yes, listeners. If you ever feel like you just need a 2-2 bear, just turn the card over and play it.
You can't do that. But if your if a card is turned face down on the battlefield, it's a 2-2.
Yes, but...
But some people use face-down cards to represent tokens that are not 2-2 bears.
Okay, that's fair. That doesn't count. It's a unique situation.
Okay. For those of you who don't know what the fuck we're talking about, there was a block called Onslaught Block, and there were creatures in that block that had an ability called Morph. And if a creature had Morph, you could play it face-down for 3 colorless mana, and it would be a colorless 2-2. And then whenever you wanted to, you could pay the morph cost to flip it face up. And then, you know, it might be like a 4-5 lifelink flying angel, or it might be a 7-7 trampler.
Holy shit, those cards got a lot better.
Or it might be like a 1-1.
That would suck.
Most people don't know this set was inspired by the series Animorphs.
Yeah, it was inspired by the Animorphs.
It was,
there was
a
like a centaur alien guy.
What a great book series that was. That was some quality literature.
That set was out around like 2002 or something like that back in the day.
Whoa!
Yeah.
I wasn't even born, you guys.
Yes, because Maria's 11. Nope, not even 11. You're 10.
Maria is an adorable 10-year-old. Precocious girl.
Yep. I'm so precocious. Fuck!
Oh, Maria, we gotta get you home to your parents.
You wash your mouth out with a bar of soap, young lady.
I'll wash it out with this Jack Daniels.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, where'd she do? I don't even...
Maria!
I'm gonna go do my toilet podcast.
Now we get to make a sitcom about this.
So, forcing, good or bad, it's up to you. I think it really depends on... What are your goals? If you just want to win this draft, maybe you force, whatever archetype is important to you. Whatever you're good at, whatever you're comfortable with.
But
if you are striving to be the best you can be, like Ash Ketchum on Pokemon, then I would recommend staying open. Learn how to stay open. It's a very important skill in life.
Ben Stark, drafting. One of the best drafters probably in the world.
Ben Stark of Team Channel Fireball.
Believes in staying open, kids.
Yeah, he recently wrote a couple articles on channelfireball.com on the topic of drafting and staying open, and I highly recommend them. Check them out.
Go read them.
He knows more than I do, and I know more than Maria and Megan, so...
It's a pyramid.
It's like a pyramid, yeah.
And I know more than a mouse.
Correct.
And that mouse knows more than some grass.
The base layer of this pyramid is mice and grass.
Oh, God.
Mice and grass, Megan and Maria, Ben.
Burn. So hopefully that answers all your questions about forcing. Also, just keep in mind, you can't force someone to force. It has to be their own choice.
Ben, you have to force red. Ben, do you hear me? You have to force red.
No means no.
Ben, you're dressed like you should be forcing red right now.
Sorry. Ooh, whoa. Yep, all right.
I'm going to put it in there anyway. I just want to take this moment to do a shout out to all our home dogs who listen to our podcast while they're at work.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If you're working right now, pour some coffee on your cubicle wall for me.
If you're at work right now, find something in your desk and eat it like it's a snack, even if it's not one.
If you're driving a big rig, honk your horn and swerve and just freak out a minivan.
If you're at work, wave hi to your boss with one finger, your choice. That's all I wanted to say, is I know we got a lot of listeners at work, and I just hope the day is going okay for you.
Yeah.
Hope you're having a nice Twix. While you're doing that Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Or maybe a meat stick and a Diet Mountain Dew.
That's yeah, my
or,
life.
Or maybe you've jammed a straw into a grapefruit and you're sucking as hard as you can.
And you're not getting much out of it, but gosh darn it, you're trying, buddy.
And
you're trying.
And you're looking good.
If you're putting shoes together in East Asia, I hope you get a new job.
If you're listening to this on an iPod you just constructed.
They probably don't let you do that. It's so sad, you guys.
How else are you going to test them out? They have to test that the iPods work with every podcast that's out there.
Pharaoh's draft time.
Time to draft. Time to draft. Time to draft. Who's had a recent draft experience? I know I have. Maria, you go first.
I just want to say...
Youngest player goes first.
10 years old.
I'm 10, and I drafted a Gray Merchant deck, everybody.
What?
It had 3 Gray Merchants of Asphodel in it, who I nicknamed Gary. And I think
you
a lot
nicknamed
of...
him Gary?
Okay, I didn't do that. The online community did.
Because that caught on super fast.
You're welcome.
You're a trendsetter, 10-year-old girl.
I am.
You're the hottest 10-year-old girl in Magic right now.
Marshall Sutcliffe, who is a commentator and host of Limited Resources, actually says that Mono Black is the best deck you can draft in Theros with the help of Gray Merchant. I don't know if that's true, but I do know that it was really awesome. I also had an Ashen Rider, which is an 8 drop. I put that in there because I was like, why not?
What? Did you play it ever?
I played it 3 times.
I'll tell you why.
Oh,
not.
Shit.
It's 8 mana.
Yep. 8 mana. And it was totally worth it because my deck was based on life gain.
Wait, Maria?
I probably shouldn't scold you for playing
I was
going to
say,
spell.
Says the guy who just played a Colossus of Akros
yeah.
in his
All right.
draft.
I have a much better reason. Than why not.
Okay, my reason, let me explain it for you, was that I was not playing mono black. I was playing white black life gain.
Oh.
Okay, so I had ways to keep myself alive and survive the early game. I also had
Give us some examples. We need to know some examples.
Sure.
Like
we've got
like,
that.
Just throw some
2/2 harpy who has lifelink. Mm-hmm. That's lovely. We have the scholar who you can pay
insatiable
harpy. Yep, we can play 2 in a black with the scholar of
Athros.
Scholar of Athros.
Or
you gain a life, they lose a life. Some baleful.
I ran afoul some of those guys.
Hopeful Eidolons.
They almost worked me over.
Yeah, yeah, man.
They'll sneak up on you.
Hopeful Eidolons.
Uh huh.
That gives you life right there.
It's a good card. Bestow that on something.
Yep.
Something
but
big.
I think the real all star besides the Gray Merchant was the Disciple of Phoenix. Is that
the
one I'm thinking
of?
Oh,
yeah. Is he the one where they have to show you cards
Correct.
And then you can make them discard one?
Yes.
That card is a baller.
He's pretty good.
Gives you 2 towards your devotion.
Yeah.
And you play a couple of those down, you play your Gray Merchant. I mean, game over, man.
Yeah, it can be pretty rough if you play a Disciple, steal one of their cards, and then play another Disciple. Like, they have to have a pretty fast deck in order to punish you for playing those Disciples out.
Oh, I also had an Abhorrent Overlord.
Wow.
So you had a 7 drop and an 8 drop?
Yes, I did.
Did you ever play the Ashen Rider just to get your devotion up?
I played the Ashen Rider when I did not need to a few times. Like 2 of the 3.
Wow.
I did not need it.
You just exiled a land or something?
And people were like, fuck you. Like, you know? I was going to win and I'm like, oh, how about we put this guy out?
And they're like, oh, but you're such a bee.
Yeah. So how did you do with that deck?
That was a 2-1 deck, and that is my own fault that it was not 3-0.
Oh, okay.
So I did not play.
What did you
do? It sounds pretty spicy, saucy spicy.
It was really spicy, you guys.
It really sounds like it.
Yeah. I don't remember exactly how I screwed up, but I just know I did not play as well as I should have in one of the matches. That's all.
All right.
Ben drafted a 3-0 deck, though.
Ben, let's hear about it.
Yes, so recently I had the pleasure of flying to Chicago, Illinois.
Real pleasure.
However, I made the decision to fly on Spirit Airlines.
Ben, why?
And so naturally, when I showed up at the airport, I was informed that my flight had been delayed by 5 hours.
Yeah. That's a totally normal flight delay time.
Yeah.
Normal for Spirit.
Perfect. It's fine. It's fine. And so I had 5 hours in which to draft a deck. So I got to drafting. I drafted a deck.
Uh-huh.
I first picked a Daxos of Miletus.
Good card.
It's a good card.
It's a fine card.
It's not unbeatable, but it does have to be answered.
And much like a phone.
And sometimes you just don't have an answer.
Much like and if you a don't, phone when the line is cut.
If you don't have a way to block, at least block him or answer him or something, then why, he can get out of control.
Why is my phone with the line that is cut ringing?
It rings and then the line is cut. This is a horror movie.
Okay. I'm scared.
Yeah, wait. That's so dumb because the killer was calling and they're like, ah, I'm going to call you and freak you out.
Ring, 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 snip.
I feel like you're also playing your hand if you, like, you, now you know the phone line's cut.
Yeah. It's like, ring, ring.
Oh, I guess I wonder what happened. I guess I'll leave right now.
Is that what you do, Ben? You realize your phone line is cut, you get out of that house?
My phone does not have a line.
But it does have a tower.
In order to cut my phone line, you have to construct a metal enclosure around me.
I'm going to knock over...
Put me in a Faraday cage.
I'm going to knock over a cell tower. I'm a very ambitious serial killer.
You're going to have to knock over more than one cell tower, I realize this.
There's
right?
several satellites in orbit that yeah. may cause some problems.
I'm
going to
shoot out
you.
A satellite and I'm going to make the movie Gravity happen.
And you're going to have to knock down like all the Wi-Fi networks in the okay. area so I can't send an email from my phone.
Okay. Yeah, no problem.
And you're going to have to stop me from connecting to any Bluetooth devices in the area.
No. You guys.
Let's go back to the make a metal box around the phone.
You just can't be a serial killer this day and age like you used to.
You really can't. It got more difficult.
Anyway, happy Halloween, fuckers.
So I took a Daxos of Miletus, and this is a perfect example because this is a card that would go great in a heroic deck.
Yes.
And so it doesn't have heroic itself, but blue-white is a color that has very good heroic cards. And so I was thinking, okay, I'll do the heroic thing. I took him. I took a Vaporkin or a Voyage's End or something, and I was like, okay, I'll be blue, I'll be white, I'll be heroic. But that's not what life had in store for me, guys.
Right.
It became pretty evident fairly quickly that I should be in green instead. I also took, like about fourth pick, I took a Colossus of Akros,
nice.
Which is an 8-mana card. And
do
it's
you know
a-
why he was at pick 4, Ben? Because he deserved to be there.
I agree. And I think pick 4 is probably about the right time to take a card like that. I took a pick 4. There was not very much else in the pack for me.
Yeah.
I think I took him over like the green disciple that gains you life for your devotion.
Nylea's disciple.
Yeah, yeah. And it was like, this Nylea disciple might be good in my green deck, but I could also just take this this card, which is playable. Technically, you can play it in any deck.
Yeah.
So I took that card and I got shipped a bunch of green. I picked up some rampers like the Voyaging Satyr. In pack 2, I ended up with the Caryatid.
Sylvan Caryatid.
Yep, which is another 2-mana card that not only ramps you but also fixes your colors.
Yes.
Which Ooh. Was cool because I'm like, okay, well, maybe now I can actually play this Daxos even though I'm probably blue green. I also got. I got past a Shipbreaker Kraken.
Oh, nice.
And a
Spicy.
And a Reaper of the Wilds.
Oh, God. I love Reaper of the Wilds.
That card is the nuts.
And I was not black at all, but at this point, I had enough fixing that I was
like, I'll play
like,
that.
Fuck it.
I'll play that Spicy Gorgon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I played him, and I played, and then at some point, I also got an Acolyte. The green acolyte that can tap for mana with devotion. So I had enough ramp and enough stuff going on that I was like, hey man, let's just do it. Let's just play these cards because why not?
Hey, let's get this done.
Did you become a stoner at the end of this draft?
Hey man, blah, blah, blah,
well,
blah,
Ben
blah.
Was waiting 5 hours for a flight. That'll change a man.
Yeah. Yeah. Sitting yeah. at Buffalo Wild Wings.
You've noticed that Ben's grown a massive beard.
Yeah.
There's one word I'd use to describe that beard. It's massive.
Yeah.
It's a thicket.
So I had a deck that had a lot of very powerful cards, It also just had a lot of good green creatures. It had like a couple coursers and a couple agent of the horizons.
Good card, great green.
A couple
blue.
Vaporkins, couple voyages ends, and so like some of the games I just played a bunch of cards and kept stacking them, and then when I didn't do that, it's because I drew a big bomb. And so then I just ramped into my big bomb. I did monstrous the Akros twice.
Oh my god. Makes it a 2020.
Makes it a 2020 trample.
And it can attack as though it did not have defender.
Yeah, and it's indestructible. So there's not a lot. The only cards that really deal with that card are the green card that can exile an artifact.
Fade into antiquity.
Yeah, and then you can also bounce it or counter it.
Man, and it does not have reach.
No, it doesn't have reach. So it's not a good blocker if they're beating you down in the air. But my deck had, I had like a 3-4 Chimera, the green-blue Chimera, and a couple of Vaporkins and some bounce.
So you could handle it.
So I wasn't too worried.
Let's do a check-in overall. Are you guys really liking Theros Draft? How do you feel about it?
You guys, I've only drafted it like once.
All right.
I enjoyed that draft.
I like it. I think it's pretty sweet.
I also really like it. It's very flexible, you know? Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about getting boned as much on your draws and stuff because what are you making that face for?
Yes, you can avoid the bone zone.
Boned on your draws.
Okay.
Do you mean in comparison to like Return to Ravnica or Dragon's Maze?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I can cast my bestow creature on turn 3, or I can wait and cast it on turn 6 or 7.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. It reminds me a little bit of those Blood Rush decks, where you can make all your expensive creatures.
That's true.
Be also pump like cheaper pump spells. Reminds me a little bit of that, although I think overall the format's much slower than those Gruul decks.
Yeah, those are nasty.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah, there's definitely I definitely enjoy it. The some of the heroic decks do seem a little out of control because there's some openings I've seen where it's like how would I fucking beat that? There's only like 2 cards in the entire game that would give me a chance.
Centaur Battlemaster.
Yeah.
Get the fucker out of here, man.
That guy's great.
That guy is so scary.
Or any heroic deck where you can play a guy, you know, you play one of these guys like Fabled Hero, and maybe you wait until turn 4 so you can have an extra white mana open, and then you have God's Willing in your hand for the entire game, and then it's just like, oh, hey, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You can do nothing. You can do nothing!
But I think there is enough variety.
I can have 2 different spells to deal with him at the same time.
There is enough variety. It definitely feels like to me that everyone kind of gets their turn to have that unbeatable opener where it's
opener.
Like, hey, fuck you, buddy. I mean, I had a deck where I just drafted where I played a turn 3 Reaper of the Wilds. And then on turn 4, I put an Ordeal of Thassa on it and kept open Hexproof mana for the next 3 turns.
Yep.
So, hey, we've all been. We all get our drink at the trough.
We all get our drink at the trough.
What about you? You feel like you're catching on better than in Dragon's Maze?
I think I had a lot of trouble with M14.
Yeah.
I was not running good in M14, but I'm doing very, very well, like very solid in Theros.
Yeah.
So I feel really good about it.
Yeah.
And I think it's because, you know, there's so much variety and curve helps. Like, I think curve was kind of like negligible in some cases in M14. Like, you could just have no 2 drops or even play on turn 3 and it's like whatever.
Yeah.
And that was really hard for me.
Yeah, this format, there's definitely, you know, the fast heroic decks where it's like you just have to be, sometimes you have to be able to do something. And I think you can still draft decks that can't deal with the heroic deck and they'll still win sometimes.
Yeah.
Like you can draft a deck like that and still 2-1 or something potentially. But you do have to still think about it, which I think lends a lot more balance to the format than like M14 or Gatecrash in the opposite direction.
Hey listener, how do you feel about it? Send us a tweet at MTAcast.
Tell us what you really think.
Don't hold back. Jinx. You owe me a
LaCroix. Oh. Just be honest. or a Diet Mountain Dew.
Guys, I bought some more lands today.
Which ones?
Oh, God.
Maria.
Did you buy Beta Lands?
What did you buy?
No, I did not buy Beta Lands. I'm not insane. I bought they're from masks of...
Mercadian masks.
Maria, you have a problem. This is a problem.
And now I have a full set of Mercadian mask foil lands.
A full set? How many lands is that? 10 of each?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a lot.
That's a lot of lands.
It was like $48.
What happens when you get the mono black deck?
I'm screwed.
Yeah, you'll have to put in some normal.
People are like, "Why are you just playing black?" These are the lands.
These are the lands I have. I bought these.
These are the lands I will use.
I will not play a non-foil, non-Mercadian land.
I bought out Star City.
I'm not a hobo.
And Star City was like, thank God someone bought those.
I don't know why somebody is buying these.
I never thought we'd get a dollar for these pieces of toilet paper.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry. Foilet paper.
Thank you. Thank you.
You guys, just think about foil toilet paper for a second. That's really uncomfortable.
It should be like... you know, one out of every 30 squares on the roll is foil.
Yes.
Oh, God, it would just fall apart in your hand.
Yep.
It's time for Megan's Standard Corner.
It's just a standard corner.
Tell me, Megan.
We're all sitting. Okay, let's all move to the corner, guys. All
right, 1, 2, 3. We have a lot of feet between the three of us.
All right, Megan.
Here we are.
Megan, what did you bring us to this corner to tell us about?
Well, I brought you guys to this corner to tell you about some standard decks that I played this weekend.
For game day.
Oh.
Yes, well, one I played at FNM and one I played on game day.
Great.
So
you've been busy.
I have been busy. I don't know why I did that. Okay. I'm tired. Moving on. FNM, I played a green-white aggro deck, which I went 1-2-1 with. I think like part of the issue was I played...
You went 1-2 and then you won with it?
No, I went 1-2-1.
Oh,
and
you
won with it.
So you won one, you lost two, and you drew one.
Exactly.
That's less exciting.
Like you drew number one.
Also, going 1-2 and then winning, that's confusing.
That's just going 2-2. Yes.
Or you went weird... one and two, and everyone.
And
else,
I had the best record, and everyone
you had
else.
The best record.
Yes. Everyone else just did shit.
This deck, I actually really like this deck.
Yeah. I think one of the issues was that three of my four matchups were control. Were against control.
What? Yeah.
And that was tough. Mm. That was one of the matches that I drew.
And what are these control decks looking like? They're like Esper decks? Like black, blue decks?
Well, one of them was blue-white control.
Oh.
One of them was red, blue, white control. By far the worst. I don't recommend it.
By far the worst.
Yes.
You're a bad person if you
You're
do that.
A terrible person.
It, like, having that
give
deck
it a,
is
give
like,
it a try, but I'm just like, saying.
It's like
of all the control
in Tennessee.
Of all the control
no
I played.
If you live in Tennessee.
I was the least impressed.
1/50th of our listeners, I'm sure. Lost 1/50th.
What?
Ben.
I'm just saying that as a deck that I played against, like the blue, white, red control seemed of the control decks that I played the weakest.
Okay, yeah. But if you have the cards, you should play.
Sure, go for it. I mean, party on. Maybe you're better at playing it than this guy.
Yeah.
He might have just not been good at playing this deck. I don't know.
You know who you are.
You know who you are. I don't think he...
Insulting listeners for almost a year. Magic Family.
I'm so good at accidentally doing that, you guys. And then I played a black-white... It was really more like black-white mid-range. Mm-hmm. But it had a lot of the control features of just a lot of removal.
So black-white mid-range is like Counts of Obsidot?
Yep, it was Obsidot and Blood Baron.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, sure.
And Elspeth.
how are you going to kill these dudes?
Yeah.
That's what I would call the deck.
Exactly. And then,
how are you going to kill these dudes?
How are you going to kill my obsidat?
Yep.
Oh, are you going to claustrophobia my obsidat? No, I don't think so.
Only if you're really like a whiny, annoying person do you play that deck. Oh, you're trying to kill my obsidat?
Oh, you're going to kill my obsidat? Oh, you're going to come kill this obsidat?
Insulting listeners. Two times today.
Yeah.
Anyways, and then besides like those were its win conditions, and then it just had a butt ton of removal, like Thought Seizes, Hero's Downfall, Doomblade, lots of that stuff. So that was rough.
Okay.
The green-white deck, also, I felt like it underperformed a little bit for me. I was not impressed with the speed of the starts that I was getting.
And did you think that was that luck of the draw, or do you think is that a fundamental flaw of the deck?
I think when it happened...
Are you going to give the deck a second chance?
I don't know, you guys, because I really felt like if it happens a couple of times, then it's like, oh, it's okay. Like, I got bad draws, or I kept hands that weren't ideal. But it kind of just happened even when I had a hand that I was really excited to start out with.
Yeah.
I was just sort of like, I would end up playing it and be like, this is fine. It's fine, but it's not great. I do think that I probably wasn't playing it as well as it could be played either. So that might have...
And you didn't play against mono red, which would have been...
That's true. I would have beat the crap out of mono red.
It's not you, green, white, aggro. It's me.
If your local metagame has a lot of mono red going on, I do highly recommend green, white, because you just cannot beat it with mono red.
Yeah, you really can't.
It is just an awful matchup.
We tried. We all tried.
We all tried.
We even gave Monterey a chainsaw.
We rotated.
Still
couldn't
do it.
Still couldn't do it.
You know, the reason you can't do that is because if you lay out the red deck and you lay out the green-white deck, it's like every card in the green-white deck, you can this is a better version of this card.
Exactly.
This is
a better version
of this card.
It's the same cost, but it's just a better card for that cost.
Yeah.
Are you saying Wizards is biased?
Maybe.
No.
Okay.
No, definitely not.
I was looking to start
little
rumble.
We don't have any lightning strike or anything in green white.
Does the green white aggro deck have one drops? Does it?
It runs four experiment ones.
Okay.
Which, by the way, you guys, if you are looking to play green white, and I do still think it's something worth trying out because I think that there's a good deck in there. I highly recommend using Chronicler of Heroes as one of your three drops if you're running experiment ones because it allows you to draw a card if you have an experiment one in play. Because it evolves that experiment one, and then you have a creature with a +1/+1 counter.
But
you draw a card.
But you have to stack the triggers right.
That's right. Stack your triggers correctly.
Yeah.
It evolves, then you draw.
Wait, does that work?
Yes.
Do we need? Did you check?
I have checked.
Because doesn't the? It's like this is like the intervening if clause rule or something, right?
I don't know the technicalities of it. I just know that it has been confirmed.
Because sometimes. Sometimes triggers will only trigger when the condition is met, and then when it resolves, it checks the condition again.
Okay.
But sometimes it'll trigger and then check the condition when it resolves, and it depends on like how the commas are in the phrase.
All right, Ben. Tell you what, we'll ask a judge. We'll get back to this.
I'm a level 0 judge, so I would like to make a ruling.
Oh, go for it, Maria.
Go for it, Maria.
I don't know.
All right. Oh, perfect.
I'm a level 0 judge, so I propose I rule that we get pizza after this is done.
Second. I accept.
Okay, accept that. Here.
There's the gavel.
Court is adjourned. Level 0 court is adjourned.
Excellent.
So, Megan, as a green-white identified human being...
Yes, I identify green-white.
Are you... And you're playing the Sagra deck. Are you disappointed that there is no green-white planeswalker? Or are you just like, planeswalker, what would I do with a planeswalker?
What would I do with a planeswalker? I do think... I mean, obviously, white has Elspeth, but she's more of a control staple.
Yeah.
Or that Orzhov midrange staple. There's a Garruk, but he's really falling into the green devotion decks right now.
Yeah.
There's just not a planeswalker for green white. But what would mono red do with a planeswalker, man?
Chandra.
Tybalt.
Oh, that's right. Mono red has Chandra. That's my bad.
Yeah.
Well.
Card advantage.
Do you know what? You're right. Where the fuck is my green white cheap little planeswalker?
Do you feel overdue?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's get it done, guys.
You also played Mono Blue on game day.
I did play Mono Blue on game day. And you guys, that deck is sweet.
I'm only one color.
I got a lot of devotion.
I got sick from kissing middle schoolers. I got the mono blues.
Master of waves.
This is a deck that won Pro Tour Theros.
Yes, it was in fact places 1 through 3.
Oh, no problem.
And I can tell you, I was playing what I call a budget version, which I only had one Tidebinder Mage because I thought I had more and then I couldn't find them.
Budget good.
Real good. Ah, budget. Budget real good.
You guys, thought you needed to listen to the radio today. You were wrong.
You're welcome.
Just need to listen to this podcast.
You're welcome.
All budget your musical blue. Needs will be met.
Yeah. Anyway, so I had some Vaporkins in instead. So I had one Tidebinder Mage, three Vaporkins. Really important. I was missing two Master of Waves. I only had two.
How did you have those two,
Megan? I feel like
Megan?
That's an important card.
Maria, you own those two Master of Waves. Congratulations.
I feel like the only card that says Devotion to Blue on it.
No, it's is important. Thassa is very important.
Okay, sure.
Instead, so I had two Masters. It would have been amazing. I put in two Prognostic Sphinx instead, which I do have to say, I hit a control matchup. Ooh. In the top four. So anyways, yes, I 4-0'd the regular rounds.
Yeah. If I'm the control deck and I'm playing you and then you play down the Prognostic Sphinx, I'm like, God damn it.
Yeah. Let me tell you, Ben.
God damn it.
That is just the worst thing that can happen to you as a control deck.
Yeah.
I was actually like, in all of my other matches, I would draw a Prognostic Sphinx and be like, I wish this was Master of Waves. And then I was playing the student control in the top four.
Yeah, yeah.
And I drew a Prognostic Sphinx and I was like, well, I'm going to play this. Would you like to supreme verdict my one card? And then he did one time, but then I played another one and he could never deal with it and I killed him dead.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yes. So anyways, the control matchup was definitely the most difficult. I won it by the skin of my teeth.
Mm.
Jace, Architect of Thought, came in a lot, really handy. Like I said, I flagrantly abused him. I would play him for four, I would tick him down two immediately and draw some cards, and the next turn I would tick him down two more and just sack the dude.
That works, man.
Exactly. I was like, do you know what? I got four cards off of this.
Traditionally, against a control deck, you want to keep your planeswalker around because he's going to give you value every turn, but Jace's plus one does not do a whole lot against a control deck.
It does nothing. I felt like in that, especially because...
What is Jace's plus one?
It says until next turn, creatures that attack you or planeswalker you control get -1/-0 until end of turn.
Right.
So it's good against aggro, except that you're already dead by turn four.
That's very true. Yeah.
But just getting those cards is,
it did the job. And at that point, I had boarded in. I had three in the main deck, and I boarded in the fourth one.
Yeah.
So I was also pretty confident that I was going to, during the course of this control match, I was going to hit another Jace meal to draw some cards off of it.
Activating Jace twice is like, it's almost like casting two Read the Bones.
Exactly.
Think about it that way.
Yeah.
Just think about it and get back to me. Your move.
Anyways, and... A couple of times I got that Prognostic Sphinx off of a Jace.
Mm.
Nice. So it was sort of like, yep, you're doing your job, buddy.
Ah, yes.
So I was really, you guys, I think that the Meadery was kind enough to not post the video online because I was very embarrassed of my performance in the finals.
Oh.
Were you
in a feature match?
I was.
Did you get nervous?
I was very nervous. And it was against a guy who I had 2-0'd earlier in the day.
Out in Magic or just like in the alley? I hit him with a baseball bat
twice and he didn't hit me at all. That happened. No,
2-0.
In Magic. Yeah. In the first game, I killed him on like turn 4 or 5. I just like Vaporkin, Night Veil, Spectre. You're dead.
Done.
And then the next game, it's really embarrassing, you guys.
Come on, you can tell me it's all right.
He played a Voice of Resurgence, and then I cast a spell during his turn.
Mm.
And I didn't even, it wasn't even a good spell.
Once I killed a Voice of Resurgence, and it still got like, you know, four.
No.
It was really dumb.
And do you know what? No, the worst part about this was I didn't even get rid of the voice. It was still just there. And then that, yeah. like, I was already pretty nervous, and I got really shaken up. And
yeah. Yeah.
I forgot to scry, you guys. Oh, I need to, no. I can't even count.
Put the dice on top of your deck?
Maria, I do. But the thing is, I put the dice on top, and when it comes to my draw step, I just, like, without thinking, I just, like, move the die and draw the card.
Yeah, yeah. You need to,
like, upgrade to a mousetrap.
Mousetrap on top of your deck. If you reach it for your card to draw,
you're gonna come in, bro.
Oh, shit. It's like, why? Now, why did I put this mousetrap here? There must have been a reason.
So, listener, if you're also having a problem with forgetting to scry or do something else on your that you do every upkeep, you have it. Put a mousetrap on top of
your
deck.
What about like one of those, spikes that they like put paper on?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, like one of those.
Yeah, so when you put your hand down to draw, you just get stabbed.
How about just like a dirty needle?
Yeah.
You can pick one of those up on your local alley. Yeah. Where you too old that guy?
Yeah, where you too old that guy with a baseball bat.
Or a powerful magnet, and then you wear a ring that also has a powerful magnet in it, so that you can't physically put your hand
You can't draw
near. Anywhere near until you take off the ring.
Oh, I like that.
And instead it just throws the top card to the side, and then like you're basically scrying at that point.
Or you put a little mirror on top of your deck, and you have to look yourself in the fucking face.
Hello.
And realize.
I'm looking at the card in the mirror. I'm masking it top or bottom.
We're 98.7. Playing the greatest hits of the 80s, 90s, and today.
Slightly different lyrics depending on the situation.
I'm Mark Fuzz. Mark Fuzz, you're a DJ. I don't have a wife anymore, so
you
drink
guys.
A lot of Mad Dog 2020.
So it's no big deal. I'm working Christmas evening.
Is anybody free for Thanksgiving?
Anybody want to do a secret Santa?
My secret is that I'm alone.
Even like a white elephant. I'd like a white elephant.
All right, so what's your takeaway? What's next for the standard corner?
You guys, I'm definitely going to try out the mono blue again. It was a ton of fun.
Okay.
I'd love to try the real version where I have enough Master of Waves. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's right now for my local FNM metagame, because like I said, it does have a tough matchup against Control, and I'm seeing a lot of that right now.
Mm.
There is also a little bit of hate for it. I ran into a couple of Miscutter Hydras. Luckily, not enough to do me in. But they were definitely in there, so watch out for that.
Mm.
And I think you guys, Maria, you're going to be so appalled.
What?
I think the next thing I'm up for trying is going to be some Esper Control.
Oh.
I think I'm going to go there.
Gross.
I think I'm going to run no creatures, Maria. I'm going to run no creatures.
No creatures? How'd that be possible?
Don't worry about it, Ben.
Threw up inside my own throat.
Watch out. Acid.
Didn't even make it to the mouth, huh?
No. It was just a little bit. It went like, meh.
Stay tuned for my podcast, Saturday Night Toilet, coming up after this.
Hey everybody, thanks so much for coming out tonight. You're here for Magic the Amateuring presents Flavor Text Theater presents Slam Poetry.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, man.
Come up and get a coffee after you've done your poem. Or don't. Whatever.
Whatever, man.
Yeah.
We're gonna take a random card from Theros and read it to you, Slam Poetry style.
First up on the mic is a very special performer to this establishment.
My name's Big Smalls. Not Biggie Smalls. Just Big Smalls.
Her name is Big Smalls. I was just introducing you. You don't have to jump the gun.
Sorry.
It's cool. It's all cool. Big Smalls. Welcome to the stage. Big Smalls, everyone. Settle down.
It's entitled Last Breath. Instant exile target creature with power 2 or less. Its controller gains 4 life. In time, all things turn to dust. Some things just take less time.
Nice. That's all nice. Big smalls. Yeah. Nice work.
Next up, coming up to the mic, it's our good friend, the Wolf Coat. Everyone, please welcome the Wolf Coat.
Ow.
Hey, everybody. I'm reading a little piece tonight called Citizen Battle Priest. Creature. Human cleric. Heroic. Whenever you cast a spell that targets Citizen Battle Priest, you gain.
This sounds legit. That's why I'm laughing. She can't even do it.
Oh god, I'll go back.
Okay.
You gain 2 life. Your god teaches you only how to kill. Karametra teaches me to defend what I hold. Teaches me to defend what I hold dear. That is why I will prevail.
Thank you, Wolf Coat. That was beautiful.
1-3.
Really moving. Next up to the mic. Introduce yourself, please.
Of course, this is your MC, Blowpole. I want to read for you guys a piece called Lash of the Whip. Instant. Target creature gets -4/-4 until end of turn. No matter who their fickle hearts worship, all mortals belong to one god in the end. I adorn a Death Priest of Erebos. Thank you very much. This has been a beautiful evening. Please come back next week when we will have a rotating cube.
Well, everybody, that's our show.
Thank you for listening.
I hope you enjoyed
it. I hope we didn't put you to sleep if you're driving. I didn't think about the implications.
Yeah, if you didn't think about that big really green driver. You first told the hot horn.
No.
And swear. All right,
next week, I promise that Flavor Text Theater will be more techno-based.
Okay, perfect.
Mungus, marauder, creature, human berserker. When Mungus enters the battlefield, up to X creatures can intimidate and haste until in a turn where X is your devotion to black. /2/2/2/2
2/2/2/2 All right, we've just lost every listener we ever had. But if you want to find out more information about us, check us out on the web at magictheamateuring.com. Follow us on Twitter at MTAcast.
You can send us an email at magictheamateuring@gmail.com or find us on themeatery.org.
Or if you're tired, you can take a nap with us on our couch in our individual homes.
I recommend Ben's couch. Very comfortable.
Yes.
It is. My couch is a day bed, though, so pretty ideal for napping.
That's good. Oh. That's good. My couch has a long section.
Ooh.
That's what got Ben.
It's a sectional. I think we just call it a sectional.
Okay.
Ladies, okay. I have my own long section.
Yeah, your nose.
But that, yep. It is very pronounced. Yeah.
You know, I think every couch has a long section.
I meant a part that sticks out.
Go on.
And is pleasurable to lie on.
Thank you, everybody. We've been Magic the Amateuring. Peace out!